Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. It is 1553, the Republic of Siena. Italy, Tuscany, building fortifications, anticipating conflict with its neighbors, especially Firenze, the Florentines. And yet, I welcome Jacqueline Schneider. She is a Hoover Fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution, as well as an affiliate of Stanford's Center for International Security and Cooperation, writing most recently at Foreign Affairs about lessons learned of technology and defense and money. Professor, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Siena is a wonderful place to start, especially because it's Tuscany. But in any event, the Sienese think they have a better idea, building a strong fortification that will withstand the depredations of attackers. Except, what mistake do they make, and how does it help us understand today in the 21st century and America's defense budget? Good evening to you.
Hi. Well, Siena makes a mistake that many states make. They end up in an arms race that they ultimately lose. So the context of what's happening at this point is you have a bunch of city-states, not just in Italy, all over Europe, and they're trying to defend themselves against what has been innovations in firepower, kind of the early days of the cannon. And at the moment, the attacker is winning. But these small city-states realize with the innovations of, you know, people like Leonardo da Vinci coming out of places like Milan, for example, and Florence, that a series of different fortifications can actually significantly slow down the attacker, that they can change the offense-defense balance to benefit the defense. And so they start investing in, you know, what, when we as tourists go visit places like Siena and Florence, or these kind of ancient walls, and what seems very odd, these, you know, triangles and moats and fortifications that today are charming, were actually all built to slow down the attacker. But this is an extremely expensive arms race, right? And it is very difficult to bring in all of this technology. And Siena starts too late and spends all its money before the fortifications are completely built. And then when the Florence invades, not only do they not have a defended city, they no longer have the resources to build an army to defend against the Fiorentini. And they're becomes the end of Siena as it's as a republic.
So simply they build a dazzling fortification, polygonal, I believe is what it's called, to avoid the cannon fire on direct flat sides, squares or rectangles. And yet the Florentines show up and take the city because there's no army. Now let's come to the 21st century. You have a wonderful quote from the chief of naval operations, Mike Gilday. Not only am I trying to fill magazines with weapons, but I'm trying to put U.S. production lines at their maximum level right now and to try and maintain that set of headlights and subsequent budgets so that we continue to produce those weapons. All very aspirational. What's the admiral talking about, Jacqueline?
Well, he's directly talking about the U.S. support to Ukraine. But what he's talking about in a larger sense is the ability of the United States to resupply its munitions. And to be able to not only build big aircraft carrier and submarines, but also to keep the weapons arsenals full. So that would be the missiles, the torpedoes, the ammunition, and the inability for the United States to not only maintain its supply to Ukraine, but then to make sure that it has the resources to equip our forces in the Pacific, for example.
We have some wonderful weapons that were featured in the early days of Ukraine conflict. It comes back to this. Our arsenal of democracy exists, except it's expensive and it's fancy. Javelins and Stingers, given great credit for reducing the Russian invasion force to parked vehicles, armored vehicles on the road, or aircraft that can't fly because there's no protecting them against handheld man pads fired from single soldiers you can't find. All of that's wonderful. However, to keep it up, we've not been able to sustain that. Did we anticipate that at the Pentagon when they came up with these wonderful weapons, that we're going to need more and more of them and we need to keep the production lines open?
Yeah, so these weapons are actually weapons that were envisioned in the late 70s and early 80s as part of a large-scale acquisition scheme tied to this thing called Airland Battle, which is where the Army and the Air Force really worked together to develop what they thought to be kind of the weapons of the future. And this is a time period where the United States is very inspired by what's happening in Israel. They call it the precision-guided revolution, and they see weapons that are similar to Stingers and Javelins that are having a huge impact on the battlefield. So you see this initial investment, and this actually, it comes at the same time that you have Reagan-era defense spending, and that so you have this huge influx of investment in these technologies, and then the wall falls. And we also have a significant reduction in defense spending. So these technologies, which were really envisioned as pivotal to kind of what they envision future combat to be leading up to the Gulf War, and actually were, you know, highly successful in the Gulf War, and they increasingly become outdated and not useful for the wars that the U.S. starts fighting, starting in 2001 and over the next two decades. So what you find is that the Taliban is not flying aircraft, and the Iraqis are not using tanks after the second campaign. And so these weapon systems really are no longer focused on by the United States. And at the same time, the U.S. is investing in other weapons that are key to counterinsurgency. And so what you find is that in the budget lines, not only does the budget for procuring these weapons decrease, it becomes such a small procurement amount that these essentially become artisanal weapons. Bespoke weapons built almost, in some cases, almost by hand, right? Because we are not turning on the arsenal of democracy here. You are basically, this is handcrafted munitions. And so Ukraine kicks off, and this is something that looks a lot more like the traditional warfare that we saw between the Israelis and its neighbors, you know, leading into the investment in these technologies. And now the U.S. doesn't have that inventory, nor have they invested in the production lines to produce these systems at any large quantities.
You remind me to turn that old phrase, you know, the generals fight the last war. Well, they might fight the last war, but keep it in your pocket because it'll be the war after next. We'll come back to it. And it's wonderful to consider that there's now thinking about where we came from, the Cold War and the wars, the symmetrical warfare units of the 20th century. Here we are in the 21st century, and there are more ironies here. The one that comes to mind immediately, you mentioned the war on terror, is a drone system of flying over the battlefield or over unusual reaches of Afghanistan and Pakistan, using a $150,000 Hellfire missile to destroy what may be a man in rags who is an operator of Al-Qaeda. That seems extravagant, an extravagant expenditure and a weapon system that is, well, it's taking a hammer to an ant. Is that under reconsideration now that the superior technology is not proportionate to the threat?
Well, it's certainly in Ukraine, these systems are not being used in the same way that we use them for counterinsurgency and the counterterrorism fight. And the focus on precision and persistence and not just speed, but also mitigation of risk really is a feature of the last 20 years of warfare. And these systems, like the MQ-9 and the MQ-1 before it, were extremely efficient for building centralized command and control systems that allowed air power to use very expensive weapon systems to mitigate both human risk to the folks that are, you know, civilians, but also to decrease the risk to pilots and other, you know, U.S. personnel. Now, those systems really were predicated on us having what we consider air dominance. So the MQ-9 and the MQ-1 have almost no ability to evade modern air defense systems. And so these were kind of like decisions we made. We said we can afford to have these expensive missiles, expensive remote control systems, because we are able to be very precise and careful about how we take airstrikes, partly because we were fighting such an asymmetric fight. That's not what's happening in Ukraine, right? These are the surface-to-air missile systems have played a huge role in defending the airs for both Ukraine and Russia. And these systems like the MQ-1 and the MQ-9 are actually just not useful at all. You find actually the makers of the MQ-9, the General Atomic, has offered it to Ukraine basically for free. And Ukraine isn't interested, right? They're investing in drones that are much more like expendable munitions.
So what we have again is a transformation, technology making transformation possible on the battlefield, but perhaps not useful. Let's go to air power. In the Vietnam era, it's B-52s, Rolling Thunder, destroying whole square miles of the jungle with, I guess, what they're called dumb bombs out of the B-52s, the huge load. And then we go to smarter weapons. And then we go to stealthy aircraft. That would have been the Iraq War of 20 years ago. And then we go to expensive drones that cannot evade air defenses that are sophisticated, such as the Russian air defenses. And now we go to off the shelf. That's a good transformation. Is that talked about at the Pentagon? Are they seeing this transformation that we go cheaper and get better rather than building more elaborate systems?
You know, I think there are not a lot of organizational incentives to invest in cheap munitions, especially. So part of the research I do is looking at how organizational identities and psychological variables affect the weapon systems that we buy. And so one of the primary reasons why we buy what we do in the U.S. Department of Defense is that each of the armed services, the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, to some extent the Marines, and they have core service identities. Like the Navy loves tradition, the Air Force loves flying and air power, the Army loves kind of people-centric. And these are core service identities that also shape the types of things that they like to invest in. So the Air Force likes to invest in airplanes. And sometimes they invest in missiles, but really it's airplanes and air power are the things they're most interested in. The Navy likes to buy submarines and aircraft carriers, and the Army is going to mostly invest in its individuals and kind of tanks, right? So their focus becomes investing in big platforms instead of innovations in cruise missiles or off-the-shelf technology like drones. And so you see actually a lot of service fights and a lot of fights inside the Department of Defense about buying these emerging technologies because you don't have a sponsor or an advocate inside the Pentagon that's really saying, hey, we need to invest just as much in the new version of a torpedo or mines, or thinking about unmanned systems for minesweeping. We need to invest in this. And instead, you have people who are advocating for, you know, the replacement for the F-35, for example, or whatever the next class submarine is going to be. And that's just kind of how the structure is built inside of the Pentagon.
Let's talk about the Navy. You have a wonderful example of something that we could miss now because it's being shoved to the side. This is the Zumwalt-class destroyer program. $22 billion? Yes, $22 billion. And, well, they haven't quite retired them, but they don't know what to do with them. How many? There are three of them? Is that it? Out of a $22 billion?
Yeah, and this is the problem, is that when weapons get so expensive, you cannot get the quality that you need to make up for the extreme reduction in quantity. Right. So there's always this kind of balance between quality and quantity. And there's an old saying that like mass has a quality all of its own. Right. So there's an idea that you just buy tons and tons and tons of stuff and it doesn't matter what the quality is because we need a lot of it. Right. But they're really the theory coming from the United States for the last 20 years is we don't need to buy as much because we're going to buy things that are just qualitatively like much, much better. But we ended up with things like the Zumwalt, where in addition to chasing high quality, we also had an acquisition process and a procurement process that was extremely bloated. And so you end up in what you would call like a gold plating paradox, where you, in chasing the development of that technology and having to do it with outdated acquisition and procurement processes, each one of the technologies becomes so expensive that they're no longer able to conduct the mission that they were initially designed to do, because you just need more of them in order to actually create the effects that you mean to create.
So the U.S. Navy has the Ford-class supercarrier that may or may not be reproduced. The Air Force has the F-35 that may or may not be reproduced. We're all ready for that war with the Martians, Jacqueline. And the Army has more and more sophisticated ways of not deploying soldiers, but working remotely, which may or may not be applicable. What is to be done with this thinking at the DOD over many decades, many generations? It isn't limited here to the 21st century. Jacqueline Schneider of the Hoover Institution, writing most recently at Foreign Affairs Magazine about a mismatch of technology and money and the mission. This is CBSI on the World. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.